We welcome you on this June afternoon as we gather to remember and honor the life of June Kermser, who died a week ago. In time's course, her name will be forgotten, as will all our names, but her fierce and loving dedication to her family, friends, and the welfare of students of every race and of every nation will be passed on from one generation to the next. As Wendell Berry wrote, I believe it goes with June. Whatever happens, those who have learned to love one another have made their way to the lasting world and will not leave whatever happens. June had the beauty of herself alive in the only moment of her life. She had upon herself, like a light, the whole beauty of the living world that never dies. May we be blessed by the beauty of her enduring light. In this spirit, I light our flaming chalice, a symbol of hope, of freedom, and of courage. Remembrances. I never knew June when she could walk. She got from one place to another on her scooter. When I visited her in her home, she always had refreshments ready. Our conversations moved across the world with a dazzling nimbleness. She and her family housed foreign abroad students, many who became lifelong friends. She loved her annual retreat to London, one of the world's finest cities. For many years, she reveled in its diversity and richness and its cultural offerings. They kept her in good company as her mobility became increasingly limited. When a trip to the doctor was an agonizing ordeal. Wherever she was, whether it was in Washington, D.C., renting a house in the Manhattan's African-American area in the 40s, or whether it was in the hospital, she found someone whom she could connect with and share her trust and her love of life. I recall a number of times in which she shared her lifelong comfort with the gay community and the numerous times she shared stories of her friendships with African Americans. I may have a few of the details wrong, I'm sure I do, but the spirit of the story is true. I recall a time when June told me that she and Phil had rented a house on that borderline, and she had two young African-American girls as friends, and she would invite them into the house for lemonade or something to refresh themselves, to play, to chat. And one hot, hot summer afternoon, and anybody who lives in Manhattan knows how hot it can get, she said, "Let's go get some ice cream." And so they went downtown to the drugstore. And June walked in with her two friends and sat down at the counter, and she said, "We would like some ice cream sundaes." The person at the counter said, "I cannot serve these two girls." In June's classy reply, she said, "Then you cannot serve me either." Word got back to June's white landlord that she entertained Negro visitors in her house, and the landlord demanded that June stop immediately this abomination And June said, "Since I am not welcome here, we will move." And move they did. June's loss of freedom increased her physical suffering. As her physical suffering increased, she was so frustrated with those constrictions that came closer and closer in on her. Not only in her body, but in the independence of deciding what she's going to do with the next minute, the next 5 minutes, the next hour. She did not like the intrusion of a constant help or constant, "I'm here to do this, I'm here to do that." It was so frustrating for her. Yet even as the suffering became unbearable, when I visited, we would find at least two things to laugh about. There was never a time I visited June when we did not laugh. She also never lost her personal pride and the need to take care of herself. I never argued with June. Any of you who have probably knows that it's not a good thing unless you are absolutely 120% sure that you're going to. Anyway, but the closest I came to getting into an argument with June was maybe 2 weeks ago now. She was just having the most difficult time with an aide who was wrapping that cord that had the button which she could use to call people when she needed help around that guardrail at least 3 feet from her reach. And every time that this happened, she would explain as politely as she possibly could, "I need that call button next to me. And would you please shut off the light in the bathroom and close the door?" And this aide, for whatever reason, failed to follow June's requests. And this frustrated her to no end. So I thought, well, we have two UU ombudsmen who go to senior citizen facilities and help navigate those troubled waters. And I mentioned this to June, and June said, "Michael, I will go toe to toe. I do not need your help or anybody else's." I stepped back. I said, "Okay, June." And then we left. The last time I visited her, she was sleeping and did not want to wake her because I knew that sleep often did not come to her. And so I left a note and kissed her on the forehead and could feel the beating of that fierce, authentic life ebbing. We are all blessed by the good fortune that she had to have parents that nurtured her individuality, her sense of independence, and she has passed it on. We are all here to receive its good news. Sandy.
Good, there are Kleenex up here. Thank you so much. You said that so much better than anybody could have. I promised myself I was going to get through this. I'll try. June Kermser. Wow. Every single one of you knew her in your own way. I have different emotions and feelings and adjectives that would describe her. For me, She was my mom, but she also was one of my best friends. And sometimes it was difficult. The arguing part is so true. And you know how kids are. But she was always so true to herself and so honest and brought so much viv and vigor and excitement and intelligence to my life growing up. As a teacher, I was often amazed at how little my students knew, because I had grown up in this environment that brought me so much. And I thought, why didn't you know this when you were 15 to this kid? And I'm thinking, well, that's because later on I realized it was because of my parents, my mom, and her love of the art. And I don't want to say too much more because I know everybody has a lot to say, and she will hear it all, and I can only say so much without going on and on. But I have a few tributes to read from students who lived with her, and I have a couple of other things, a poem that she wrote when she was 12. Before I do that, I don't want to forget, I want to thank the Manhattan Mercury for the very nice article they wrote on in last Tuesday's paper, and to Kayman and the school board members who were there for the really, really beautiful tribute on Kayman. I've had many people email me and say that they listened to it, and hearing my mother's voice brought tears to their eyes. She had a beautiful voice. She was a perfect radio person. So anyway, this is a poem that she wrote when she was 12 in 1933. I walked the street that night alone, fearing I should be seen or known. I had not meant to do any wrong, but that is always the bad man's song. Did anyone see me take that pear? The devil thrust upon me a dare that made me go against my will. But he, the devil, is laughing still. Said God, my son, you must take care lest you walk into the devil's snare. The devil whispered, don't take heed. You know, you've got yourself to feed. I pondered, let the pair decide. I brought it from my coat inside and held it up to see it better. Then 'twas done. I wasn't God's quitter. I took it back to Tony's stand, but Tony grabbed me by the hand. I did wonder if you'd bring it back. He gave me the pear and an apple in a sack. I went home that night to my bed of straw and knelt upon my knees before my God and felt I had been saved from a quitter's mission by Italian Tony, who wasn't a Christian. That at 12, age 12. I mean, she was way ahead of her time. Before I read the tributes, I don't know if any of you got to really look at the video, but there's a picture of her with her braids up in front of some pots. That was when she was in the Netherlands with my dad when he had his sabbatical. And there's an article that went with it. I just want to read a little bit of it because at age 30, oh, it's because it's upside down. At age 30, she already, well, let me start over here. Already was an activist. And a very strong one. This is the original photo. This is their scrapbook from when they were in Holland. But this has been translated by somebody from the Dutch. The title says, "Come on, buy cheese." And it says, "American in the Netherlands chooses our side." Accidentally, we came upon a copy of the St. Paul Pioneer Press, wherein a letter was written by a certain Mrs. June B. Kermser, living on the Sarfatikade 15 in Amsterdam. The letter protested strongly against the action of a few congressmen from the state of Minnesota who supported a proposal to stop the import of cheese from the Netherlands.
The Netherlands, which was hard hit by the war, does its best to recover, and in this relationship, the cheese embargo forms a serious menace, the letter said. And so we went to meet this friend of the Netherlands, June Kermser, a kind of person that one might call jolly and plump. Was busy with the great knowledge of things, preparing a meal on a two-burner gas stove. June said she had written the letter not only to the Pioneer Press, but also to a number of other newspapers and would be interested to see what occurred. Her feelings were that it was a scandal that Holland cheese should be cut out from consumption in her home country. So, and there's more, but that's the important part, just to show even then, even overseas, she was actively working for things to improve things. Okay. I have several little tributes from different people. Ernst Lushner was the first AFS student to live in Manhattan, and he lived in our family. He's now 68 or 9, something like that, and they have been in touch forever. And this is a little excerpt from a letter he wrote. He said, "The legacy June leaves behind is enormous and unparalleled, especially if we consider the contributions she has made in the field of education and in particular with the Manhattan School Board. She has certainly enriched my life to a degree which is only surpassed by my own parents, and the memory of her will always be with me and with Valdi too," his wife. So that's from Ernst. The next person a lot of you probably have met too is Eric Jurel. He was with the math department for a while. June was bigger than life, and this is why it is so hard to say something that has not already been said about somebody who embodied and embraced life like she did. We've known the Kermsers for more than 45 years. I, Eric, as a young man wishing to experience life in the U.S., and a few years later, Cheryl and I as a newly married couple. During my first day in Kansas, hosted by the Kermsers, my advisor at Oxford took it upon himself to warn them that I was a dilettante. June promptly wrote back to him saying, "That's the way we like them here in Kansas." Never one to let someone else make up her mind about something, she was always involved in a cause. This made for long and interesting evening discussions and something for the newspapers to write about. When we think about the nine-month period living with the Kermsers in 1975 before returning to Switzerland, three things stick out in our minds. The Saturday drive to Junction City for roasted sausages, sleeping in the wooden canopy bed made by June's father, and the musical evenings where Phil and Ruby Haft would play double hands on the piano. Even though we left the U.S. in 1975, our friendship and love for each other did not stop. We continued to see June on her visits to London, and Phil came to Switzerland every other year for as long as his health permitted. Birthdays and anniversaries were met with a note from June and Phil. We kept up regularly through telephone calls and emails. The last call with June was only a few weeks ago when we learned of her accident. We thought that she would defy this like so many other things, but alas, it was not to be. We will miss the discussions with her, her laugh, her wit, and most of all, her love for us. As so many letters from her ended with big hugs from us, we send big hugs and kisses to you, June. May you sleep peacefully and know that a piece of you will always be with us. And from Paul Hunt, who is from England, asked me to read this on his behalf. "June and Phil changed my life. In 1977, when I was a university student in England, they invited me to spend a year with them in Manhattan auditing classes at K-State. My time with June and Phil was an extremely rich formative experience that shaped my personal and professional lives. We remained in touch ever since, and I regularly enjoyed evenings with June in London. June opened my eyes to personal politics, feminism, psychology, and creativity. Above all, she opened my eyes to how relationships work and the defining importance of loving acceptance of others and of oneself. Without June, my life would have been immeasurably impoverished. In recent weeks, when we spoke on the phone, June said, 'I want to go home.' She will be with me until I too go home. June and Phil have my deep gratitude.
and loving acceptance. So, I guess that's all from me, except that I still want to tell her about everything. I want to go home and say, you should have seen who was there. Thank you all very much for coming. I'm going to turn it over to my nephew, Phil Kermser, from Washington.
This is an excerpt from a play called Adam's Motion in the Void by Sean Hurley that I thought was appropriate. To know that nothing can be saved, held, or kept. To know that nothing can be touched, seen, heard, or felt. To know that there is nothing ever else to learn and never anywhere to go. Nothing to add, increase, enlarge, better, or further. To release all custody over people, all intention over things. To have no control. Nothing to own. To have no more appointments, not a single worry. No need or urge, nothing to satisfy, no lack or incompletion. No something in the corner that needs mending, no place to go, no one to visit, nothing to fight, none to injure, bind, tie, manipulate, or confuse. No one home, no car to drive, no shoes to wear, no coats to clean, nothing left to tie or fold, nothing left to borrow, make, move, or transfer. To know that one must travel deeply and steadfastly into the dream of one's own self, to explore the full weight of the tyranny of, and the suffering of, and the forgiveness of that which is called original sin, which is itself alone and simply illusion. Simply an illusion that one is a person, privately held, separate from all others, distinct from the world. A fragment set in space unto oneself and capable of unique action. To learn that what one calls real is in fact a dream. To learn that what one believes is itself the material to be transcended. The blessing of this grace is to be possessed by an indifference to anything not essential, and to surrender one's self endlessly into every moment without demand. To know that one dies into the vortex of one's birth, and that all beings, animals, and matter, whether stone or tree, bear forth from the self-same emptiness and return there when complete. To die in one's own arms as everyone has been, invisible, strong, transparent, clear, cradled thereby in the crucible of the hands of God, which is nothing but love, which is nothing but the universe, which is nothing but the self, which then, in its fulfillment, may be said to be comprised of this trinity alone, of atoms, motion, and the void. So, thank you.
Hello, I'm June's niece, daughter of her beloved brother John. And I'm going to say just a few words, and then I'm going to read a poem I wrote, and then I'm going to read a couple of June's poems. I think it's interesting to think about who influences us in our life. I knew June as a little girl when I was in elementary school, only for a few years, and then they went to Holland, and then they came back. And then I knew them for a few more years, and then they moved to Kansas. And I didn't see them much after that. But when I think of June, I think of these four things. Poet, social worker, she was a school social worker, political activist, citizen of the world. Kierkegaard says, we live life forward, but we understand it backward. And so I want to kind of look backward and say, I am all of those four things that I just listed. How did that happen? How did that happen that I became a poet, a social worker, a political activist, and a citizen of the world from this incredible, incredible woman that I called my aunt, even when I wasn't with her. Because you probably all know, she had this incredible correspondence. Never missed a birthday, never missed a Christmas, and she didn't write, you know, Hallmark cards. She wrote about the world and about life and what was important, and always, always had that little article in with it that was in the paper that she'd written. So when I think, how did I get a worldview the way she has her worldview? I think of when I was maybe 2 or 3. One of the first things I remember in my life was being picked up by a 7-foot man from Holland and being put on top of a very tall refrigerator because June and Phil had brought these people out to our house who were working with Phil, I guess, at the university. Very, very tall Dutch people. And I can still remember that, being put on top of that refrigerator. After my dad died when I was 13, my sister and I got on the train and came down to Kansas here, and we met Ernst, their first foreign exchange student, and of course fell in love with him. Falling in love with somebody from across the ocean opens up your world, opens up your world. And for every Halloween for about, I would say, 6 or 7 years, my sister and I wore our beautiful little Dutch outfits that they brought back from Holland with the pointed hats, the wooden shoes, and long black skirt and apron. And we felt like we were part of another world. So that was all from Aunt June and Uncle Phil. Social worker, that's easy. I think my dad learned the same thing that June did from her parents, that everyone was equal. And we too had people in our home that other people didn't have in their homes. And that was normal because we are all equal. Now, political activist, I might say that I didn't know that June was a social worker until after I got my degree in my 40s. Political activist, I did know that. Even when I was little, I knew that my Aunt June was a political activist. She gave voice to people who had no voice. I think that's the easiest way to say it. She gave a voice to those who had no voice. And poet, I haven't read much of June's poetry. What I have read, I love. But we had that in common, and I think that comes from my grandma, June's mother. When I was in second grade, I remember going to my grandma's house, must have been on a Sunday afternoon, and reciting all of this poetry by heart that my second grade teacher was reading to us after our lunch every day. And so on my birthday that year, I got a leather-backed poetry book. Not a kid's poetry. It was 100 of the world's best poems, leather-backed. I still have that book. She gave that to a second grader, my grandma. I know she did the same thing to June. That same kind of thing. Some people call it planting seeds. I think of June as my Johnny Appleseed. And not only me, it was probably for you as well. So when you go to bed at night, we know that we have spoken for the earth in our poetry, that we have spoken for the voiceless in our activities, that we have empowered the powerless, and we've made peace with all peoples of the world. And then we also can rest in peace, knowing that June has done her work. Now, I would like to read one of my poems. It's called There Is Love There, and I want to read it for Uncle Phil because it would have been their 70th anniversary today. There is love there. I'm standing at a gas station watching a man fill his truck. He's careful not to scratch the black paint, not drip gasoline from his tank, and when the door opens and closes again, he does it with a tenderness usually reserved for infants. Not slamming or pushing, but tenderly guiding the door into the latch, then patting it like a cowboy saying goodnight to his trusty horse. There's affection there. And coming out of the store, I see a woman clutching one of those named purses that costs as much as airfare to London. She does not look into the purse as she pulls out sunglasses and keys, knowing each pocket and what it holds. Its shape has molded to her shoulder, showing its age. There's affection there. And I wonder if we, like the truck and the purse, all begin as needed and become the needy. As when that old black ram's mileage gets too high and it can't be thrown away, so it gets hauled to the pasture of past vehicles behind the barn. And the purse ends up on the floor in the dust of a cedar closet, never used again, but not thrown away into the goodwill bin either. And someday, when we are unable to work, my husband and I will move out of our nice big house, give it our blessing, and relocate to a smaller one with no old trucks and old purses, only our cherished belongings, and of course, each other, both of us unusable. There is love there. And I would like to read two of Aunt June's poems, very short. First one was written in 1967. It's called Very Me. I climb an ageless mountain. I scan an errant sky. I swim a lazy river. Why do I? I touch a tiny flower. I stroke a drowsy cat. I hold a laughing baby. Why all that? I just can't say exactly, except I'm very me, and love with all its wonders is all I have, you see. And the second one is called Knowing, written in 1978. Death swept in, graceless and arrogant, taking from me a gentle love while snapping that I couldn't have the world. Angered, I reminded him that he emptied not my world by snatching bodies, that for every stolen love, I would cherish another. He looked at me and smiled. I turned from him and cried.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. But where are the clouds? Isn't it bliss? One who keeps tearing around, one who can't move. But where are the clouds? Send in the clouds. Just when I'd stop opening doors, finally knowing one that I wanted was yours, making my entrance again with my usual flair, sure of my lines, no one is there. Don't you love farce? My fault, I fear. I thought that you'd want what I want, But where are the clowns? Quick, send in the clowns. Don't bother, they're
Now is the time when we ask those of you who would like to share a remembrance that you have of June and hold dear and would like to let out into the world. This is the time to do so. We have a microphone that will pass to you. Please stand if you're able and share your name and then your remembrance. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Chuck Thompson, and I knew June for many, many years, and I could share many stories about her, but I'd just like to share one where I had the privilege of increasing her love of life. I had a good friend back then, still have him, and he lived in London. His name is John Gardner. And one time when he was visiting here, I got June and he together. I think he tells me it was at the Ramada Inn. And they became wonderful friends. And when she went over there on her yearly pilgrimage, they would go to dinner together. They would go to plays together. They would go to performances by the symphony together. And they just had a wonderful time. Thank you.
My name is Harish Manocha, and I just want to share a wonderful memory, and it has been for a long time with me and our friends. I came to the United States in 1961. The month of September. And I used to have a friend here who is now in Los Angeles, Dr. Lakhbir Singh. And we both were invited by June in November on Thanksgiving Day. What a memory that carried, you know. I tell you, it was so great to be with the family at that time. And June and Phil, you know, were so gracious. Not only that, afterwards we've been together for a few times at our place as well as June's place. And Phil and June used to come to Aaron Field House for swimming, you know, in that those big swimming pools. And you know, I asked Phil, you know, where's June today? And he said that she had some ear infection, so she quit. After that, of course, she used to do exercise or whatever at home. But anyway, Phil and I, for many, many years, together, you know, used those swimming pools, you know, until Phil then, you know, didn't want to come anymore. But it has been just a great memory and wonderful things, you know. And of course, you know that June sometimes used to ask me, you know, she was a great international figure. And she used to ask me, hey, do you know a little few lines from some other poetry from, you know, in, and of course, you know, I have known that some people, of course, you know, will care very much. And I sing, you know, for number of organizations, you know. And one of the things, you know, I mentioned to her just two lines. Ghar ye tera sada na mera hai. This home is not forever where we live. There is other place to go to. Ghar ye tera sada na mera hai. Ghar means home. Raat do raat ka base raah hai. Raat do raat ka base raah hai. We live in this. But eventually, someday would come when we will move from this place. Ji ko badhti hui udasi ne, ji ko badhti hui udasi ne, kya akela samajh ke ghera hai. Ji ko, sometimes we don't feel good inside, and this kind of you know, we are sad. But what kind of sadness is that? You know, later on, sometimes when you think of good things, your mood would change. This is just two lines I recited to her, you know, a couple of times. Thank you very much. We celebrate her life so greatly.
Just like to say, I'm Rosa Hickman. June has been my very special, loving friend for almost 70 years. She has taken me out to dinner so many times. She has been to my church many a time in our community, helping where she could make things better for us. And I recently met her daughter. Her husband has came many times and taken me to functions that June was in, and they're just like family and very, very nice, special people. I love them. Thank you.
My name is Mary Beth Allen, and it was a very beautiful privilege and honor to take care of June. We used to laugh a lot. I miss her so much. She was the type of person that you could go to and tell her anything, and she would just say it would just be between you and me. And then if you would ask her something, she would really study really hard. And the first thing that would come out of her mouth would be, theoretically. And you know, I will never forget that as long as I live. And it was an honor, like I said, to take care of her at Meadowlark Hills and to take care of her father, Phil, and it was a blessing that they were both able to come to my wedding 6 months ago. I'm a newlywed, and I think that was the happiest day that I've ever seen June smile. She was so happy for everyone, including me, and she always like Sandy said, and the niece, she always treated everybody equally. And I really, really admired that about her. And we actually got married on Phil's 92nd birthday. So that I will always, always remember also. And that she really, really, really loved her family. We talked about them a lot. And she was just a very special person to me. Thank you.
I didn't come prepared to do this. My name's Nancy Knopp, and I'm one of several school board members, ex-school board members that are here today. But I'll just speak for myself, but I have a feeling that a lot of these thoughts would be shared. The thing about June, I really didn't know June except by legend until 13 years ago. And there was something about having her at the back of that school board meeting room every single time that was so steadfast and reassuring. And I never wanted to be on someone's... I knew it, you could watch June's body language and watch her face to know if you were on the right track or the wrong track. And you know, I'm a grown woman. I'm going to be 60 years old this summer. And I'm at the point in my life when I don't need anybody else's approval, but I always wanted June's approval. And she was so good about writing those letters, giving you a phone call, and being there for advice and counsel. Because she, as a social worker too, would read people's body language and would pick up on nuances and that sort of thing. And was always eager to share her thoughts when asked, and sometimes when not asked. But I just would say that June's letters are something that I will never throw away. And you know, when I think about it, it's your families, they're special friends in your life, and they're special family members, but June's letters are in my special place. And the thing that makes her counsel unique is that she would sit at a school board meeting from beginning to end. And so she caught the whole thing, not just a snippet of what she'd read in the paper or hear on the radio. So you knew that June knew the issues inside and out because she sat there through the whole thing. And that was helpful to have that objective voice. And it was always comforting to hear her voice call in on the radio station when you do the radio show. She truly cared, and she will be missed.
My name is June Campbell, and my husband, Don, and I didn't come here prepared to say anything. I don't know how to say this and if I'll get everything exactly how it happened, but about 7 years ago, our son, Brian, was going down Tuttle Creek Boulevard on his day off, and he was a police officer for another county. And her little Volkswagen had just been fixed, and it had broken down. And so nothing had been actually said to us about this, and my son didn't think much about it. He just pulled right on over in the busy traffic. Nobody, as she put it to me, is nobody would stop and help me. But your son stopped that day and helped get my car out of the way, stayed with me, called the garage, and also made sure I got home okay. We didn't know, and Brian had said that he had helped someone, but then several weeks passed, and I was at work, and I got a call from this lady saying, "Are you Brian's mother?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "I just want to let you know that I am so proud of your son, and you are such great parents that when I was in need, your son stopped and helped me when I felt so helpless." And from that time on, we have kept in touch. 5 years ago, our son passed away, and June and Phil came to the visitation. I had not met them as of that time. And she wrote one of the most beautiful tributes for Brian at his funeral. And I have cherished that every day. And from that time on, we have kept in touch. She has sent letters and called on the phone. I have called her. In fact, I just got a letter from her a couple of months ago stating that they had sold their home and had moved, I think it was Meadowlark. And so she has been such an inspiration, full of compassion, helped us get through our time of difficulty. And if it wasn't for her, I just don't think we could have made it. She helped us so much.
I'm David Colburn. I currently serve on the USD 383 Board of Education. So like many others here, owe June a debt of gratitude. Theoretically, this should be easy. And I knew I needed to say something today, but I'm struggling. June was remarkable. I don't know that I've met anybody that lived a life like hers. Her honesty and her directness were refreshing. Michael used the word fierce. Fierce is a great word for June. Her fierce loyalty to humanity and truth and justice will go with me. She had a lot to be proud of, but she was most proud of her children and her grandchild. And when I visited June, I didn't say much. I just listened, and I heard a lot about her family and how much they meant to her and how proud she was of them. So the last little story I'll have about June is I'd been on the board for about 2 years, and we were in the process of hiring a new superintendent. And it happened to be the day that Dr. Shannon was being interviewed, and he was going to meet people from the community. And, of course, June was there. And I was bustling around and trying to make sure everything was going well. And June grabbed me and pulled me down and said, "You know, you've really grown into this job, David." And I bristled, because in my hubris, I thought I was good from day one. And being a social worker and a body language reader, she knew she had sort of struck a nerve. And so she later pulled me aside again and said, "That was not to say that you weren't good when you started." So thank you all for being here. It's wonderful to see such a collection of friends and family in honor of June.
A lot of us here have to thank June for the Unitarian Church. She was one of the founders, and I don't know how many years ago that was, but a couple of years ago we were celebrating an anniversary, and of course we wanted June to come and talk, and she was having problems getting around, and we begged her, and she came and gave a wonderful talk. So after it was over, since I was on the committee, I wrote her a thank you note. And guess what? Those of you who knew June wrote me a thank you note for the thank you note. She was something else.
My name is Dave Lewis. I first got to know June shortly after I came here to work at K-Man Radio in 1991. And there are a few listeners in my broadcast career that touched my heart, as did June. I don't know when that woman ever slept. I would get phone calls at my house, 2 o'clock in the morning, Dave, K-Man's off the air. We were impaired technically for a while there, and we were making some transitions there. But she always would have additional conversation because I would have my cell phone, and I would take my cell phone with me, talk to her when I was in the car, not hands-free, it was legal then. And while I was fixing things at the radio station, we would continue our conversation. We'd talk about Sandy. We'd talk about my daughter, Casey. I think one of the things that was so neat about those moments a few times after this became habit for June to call in the middle of the night, that she wrote a nice note to my wife saying, "Sorry for interrupting your sleep as well, my dear." And I know that Elena always treasured that. One of the things that I'll always treasure about all the conversations with June is the way she closed each conversation, and that was, "Goodbye, love." We never fully agreed or fully disagreed on a lot of topics that we talked about over the years. But as the poem in the back of the program says, "My heart is large, I know." And I believe everybody in this room today knows that her heart is as large as any woman or any person that we have probably ever met.
My name is Bob Shannon, Superintendent of Schools, for those that were not familiar with one another. 7.5 years ago, after I was offered the position of superintendent, and it's not unusual in a public position like that, to receive cards and letters of welcome and greeting. And I had many of those, all signed and all very proper. And from those who would welcome us to their church community, if we did not have a church home when we'd moved to Manhattan, from representatives of real estate companies, to those who had been leaders in booster clubs and athletic groups in Manhattan and informing us of the work they've been done, all very good. But 2 or 3 weeks after we'd accepted the position, a letter arrived in the mail. It was in black ink, cursive. The stamp was not a 38-cent Forever Liberty Bell stamp. It was a unique stamp. So from before we even opened it, I thought, this is different. So opened up the letter, 2 pages, again, longhand, cursive. And it wasn't advocating support for the soccer program or this kind of elementary mathematics program. It said, "You do important work. Look into yourself for wisdom, for character. Exhibit fairness at all times." It was all about the importance of the work and public education. And I've kept it also. And it's just one of the most unique letters I ever received. Fast forward then a couple of years, maybe 3 years, had a call from June, and she said, "I just want to tell you that I'm seriously thinking of retiring," meaning no longer attending Board of Education meetings. And I said, "Let's talk." I said, "Is there anything that we could do to extend that?" And she said, "Well, it's getting increasingly difficult for me to get from the car to the room." And so I said, "Let's talk to Dr. Russell." And at any rate, we extended the time that June served on the board and in the room by a good year and a half, by some extra helps to get there. But when she did finally retire from the board, board members, you all know, got together and we said, let's do something more. June had been coming to Board of Education meetings in Manhattan since I was in kindergarten in California. So we said, let's name the meeting room after June. But we didn't just do that unilaterally. We knew better than that. So we said, well, how should we approach this? And so Nancy and I stepped forward and said, we'll talk it over with her. We set a time, first called and said, well, we'd like to come over. How about Tuesday afternoon? She says, I have something then. I said, okay, but we established a time. We went. We arrived at the appointed time that afternoon, and June had made some cookies and had some English tea, and we were seated in the living room, and it was all very, very pleasant and very warm, and Nancy is nodding, And then after the second cookie, June sort of turned her head a little bit, looked right at us and said, "What's up?" So we had the talk, and she said, "Let me think about it, and I'll get back with you." And, of course, she gave us a favorable response. And I have this last just observation, remembrance of June, and I'll use the nice version of this. One of the things is I've had discussions with her over the years about school policies or decisions or choices that her baloney detector was very accurate and right on the mark every time.
My name's Ralph Titus. I have a quick broadcasting story. Not as good as what Dave did, but this is a quick one, and it's something I'll never forget and lived with for the rest of my career. I was doing a sports story, which I didn't do very well anyway. This was an AP story, and it was a baseball game, and I said, and the pitcher hurdled the ball toward the batter. I got a rather caustic note from June. The note said, "Titus, keep the track and field events out of the baseball games." I could have lived with that kind of a critique for my entire career. We'll never forget her.
Larry Weaver, another school board member. I can't give you a story to illustrate this except to do it with my hands. When June was in her 80s, I'm sure she was not as tall as I am, but I remember her like this. And seconding Barbara Hacker, I cannot thank her and Phil enough for getting this fellowship off the ground. And here we are 50-plus years later, thanks to their initiation, continued inspiration, and support. Thank you, June, and thank you, Phil.
We thank everyone who has shared, and for those of you who have as good or better memories, we hope that they are held in our hearts in ways that only June might understand. I was asked by Sandy to read, I'm going to probably pronounce this wrong, Sandy, but I'm going to give it my best, Desiderata. Desiderata. I knew it, I would get it wrong. But anyway, Desiderata, right? And I've adapted it for this afternoon. It was something that June gave to Sandy as a young girl. Is that correct? And it hung on her steady wall until she died. Amid the noise and haste, remember what peace lives in silence. Without surrender, be on good terms with every person. Speak your truth with quiet clarity. Listen to others, even the dull and ignorant. Each of us has a story. Avoid the loud and aggressive. It vexes the spirit. Avoid comparing yourself with others. You may become vain and bitter. Enjoy your achievements as well as plans. With humility, follow your vocation. Be mindful of trickery in the world of business. But know, people of virtue strive for ideals, and heroism can be found everywhere. Be yourself. Do not feign affection or be critical of love. It survives drought like the prairie grasses. With grace, surrender the distractions of youth. Let the years kindly counsel. Nurture a strong spirit that weathers sudden misfortune. Remember, fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. Don't distress yourself with their imaginings. Beyond a healthy discipline, be gentle to yourself. No less than the trees and stars, claim your right to be a child of the universe. It unfolds as it should. Be at peace with your God, however you conceive her to be. In life's clamor, keep peace with your soul. The beauty of the world endures all sham, drudgery, and broken dreams. With care, strive to be happy. With these words, I would like to close. May we all, with the dignity and courage of June Kermser, move into this world with the spirit of the holy loved. May it be so. And please join us for refreshments afterward in the sanctuary behind. Thank you.